This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Power Business, 6 to 8 p.m.
All right, the time now is 19:35 on Power Business this evening with myself, Nosipho Radebe, standing in for Noluthando Ntontimlambo. This evening, we've had some robust conversations about the workplace in our Ask Your HR segment. And then before that, we spoke to Jeremy Sampson on brands and their performance in South Africa. And so as we do every Thursday evening, we now get into our Power Suit segment, where we speak to executives about their career and work they do for a living. Tonight's Power Suit is Khandani Msibi, the executive chairman of 360 GSG, an integrated solutions group that offers diverse products and services in the pharmaceutical and medical aid industries. The company started as a medical aid health insurance administrative business in South Africa, providing administration and management care services to Sizwe Hosmed, a top 10 medical scheme in South Africa. Khandani Msibi has over 30 years of experience, which started in manufacturing in the steel industry and later moved to the FMCG industry, working for companies like Bristol Myers Squibb, Broma Foods, and Amalgamated Beverage Industries, ABI, at senior management level. His introduction into sales was when he was appointed National Sales Director at FedEx. After a short stint in a water board as CEO, he joined NUMSA Investment Company when it was being liquidated and rescued it with a team of professionals. Msibi and his team transformed NUMSA Investment Company from being a funeral services company into a group of companies in life insurance, medical aid, retirement fund, and investment, and lately biotechnology. The transformation of NIC has resulted in the creation of two groups of companies, Doves Group Holdings and 360 Global Solutions Group. 360 GSG has invested in biotechnology startup companies, which includes Cape Sativia, which is cannabis business. Mr. Msibi, thank you so much for joining us this evening and welcome to Power Business.
Nosipho, thank you very much. Thank you for having me. And they really gave you quite a detailed history of our group.
Indeed, they did. So let's talk about your upbringing and what you wanted to do as a child and what your first job was.
Oh, no. I was born in 1964. So I've turned 60 on the 4th of January. So I'm a very old young man in many respects. Uh-huh. I'm very vibrant in life. In fact, in many areas, my career just started because I'm studying a whole lot of things at the time that many people begin to wind down their careers. I'm winding up. Grew up in the Vaal. Trained as a welder, metal worker, qualified as did a diploma in mechanical engineering, I've been in production since 1989 when I was appointed production trainee. I became a production foreman in 1991 at the same company, Stewart & Lloyds, and then later on at Sun Crush. That's when I got into the FMCG industry. My first real managerial job was at the Bristol Myers Squibb, where I was appointed by Mafika Mkwana as a package manager. I had my first company car. I always thought that I made a mistake. And one day they're going to say to me, oh, we made a mistake. The company car wasn't meant for you. It was a Jetta CSX. Brand new, in those days. I mean, it was quite an achievement.
Can I stop? I just wanted to stop you there on that Jetta CX X car, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Growing up, that was quite a big, I know in my family especially, my father really loved that car. So I just wanted to note that for you.
It was quite a strong, reliable car and a major achievement in those days. And yeah, I think my real managerial talent was honed at Bromo Foods, where I joined in as a production manager and then packaging manager. I mean, a factory manager, producing oros. I know how to make oros, moyas, custard, jelly, nice things. I was in the team that brought Energade to market with the likes of a Guy Morrison. I produced the first Energade product in the country. In fact, we moved into sports drinks, claiming that we're going into a gunfight with swords, because we're actually positioning this drink against Coca-Cola brands. And then I think to cut a long story short of my career, I've been working since 1983, so you can tell there's a lot to tell. But the greater part for me was when I joined Lumsa Investment Company and we moved it out of liquidation. And the only asset that existed then was a Doves Group. It was a funeral services business. And Doves, as you would know, it was a white undertaker. And we're concerned that at some point, white people will realize that Doves is a black-owned enochal by NUMSA, right? And would lose the clients. So we wanted to move Doves into the black market, right? But the Doves way of conducting funeral. White people, when it's a funeral, it's a mourning session. For black people, it's a celebration of life. And amongst white people, it's always the elderly that die, right? And amongst black people, there's a lot of young people who die, right? And so you tend to have a very different culture has been born out of that when one person who's 80 years, 85 years has died, it's a different set of circumstances. But there's this thing of a celebration of life amongst black people that required very flashy funerals, which the Doves people could not do, right? So in order to solve that, we wanted to buy a black undertaker and have a cultural infusion. But we went to see Aubrey Mukabel, who owns 21st Century, 21st Century Funeral Services. And we told Aubrey why we want to buy his business, that his people could teach our people how to conduct a black funeral. I think out of that meeting with Aubrey, we had our own Damascus moment. Our lives changed because Aubrey said something there that really changed our outlook in life and our outlook of the group. Aubrey said to us, after all conversations, he said, "Let me tell you how we at 21st Century conduct a black funeral." He says, "We at 21st Century conduct a funeral so well that the family looks forward to the next one." And to me, it was like, this is not how I want to make money. This is not how I want to contribute to the world. I don't want to be the one that actually burying people. It's not the only thing that I should do, right? So we had our Damascus moment there, and the group changed, right? That, hang on, we want to be in the good times with our people. We want to insure you. You pay us a premium for a long time, so we sell you a peace of mind. In the event you die, we'll bury you. That's when we bought the insurance business. Then we said, no, beyond that, we need to make sure that you actually live long. Right? That became the motto of the organization. It's a way we have this saying that death before the age 80 is death too soon. Right? This whole idea of a celebration of life when a young man has died, it's a bit of a problem because we should really be concerned about young people dying early. In fact, their death should actually send us to the drawing board, and where we must find out why this happened and how we can prevent this from happening, as opposed to accepting it as a natural eventuality and having a celebration of that life. That became the things that began to trouble us as an organization. So we entered healthcare, created a medical brokerage business to understand healthcare purchasing patterns, and then we then bought into a medical administration business, We wanted to get into hospitals, but our strategy did not succeed in that area. But we were introduced into biotech, where we can enter innovative biotech space, right? Because we didn't want to get into pharmaceutical and make generics, right? Unfortunately, in South Africa, the pharmaceutical companies just make generics. They don't innovate and bring up new solutions into the healthcare environment. So we were introduced to a gentleman called Martin Magwaza, whom showed us how we can play in the space. And we discovered South Africa in that process. We discovered that this country is one of the most innovative country. And I think it was also a reminder that this is a country that brought about the pebble bed modular reactor, which, by the way, has been brought into South Africa now as a small nuclear modular reactors, right? But it's an innovation that comes out of South Africa. This is the country that came up with the Rooivalk. There's many innovations that came out of this country, but somehow the state moved away from supporting innovations. I think our state has been cowed completely out of business. Yeah? To a point where the state sees itself as corrupt, it sees itself as incapable. But if you look at the countries that are successful, they are state-led. I mean, the U.S. economy is state-led. I mean, the whole internet that we have today was started in the U.S. military, and everything that is built on the
Well, it appears we've lost our guest, Kandani, who was just detailing for us his illustrious career and his experience and what motivated him to move from where he was to where he is. We're going to try to get him back on the line and continue our conversation with him. Kandani, can you hear me? Are you back with us?
I'm back with you, Nosipho. My apologies. I don't know what happened there.
No problem. You can just pick up from where you left off.
Where did you lose me?
So you had just finished off and on Doves, and you were moving into really the celebrate. What motivated you to move on from that space?
Oh yes. Oh, and I think for us, the and that's a conversation with Aubrey Kabel, right? For us, it was the aha moment. It was a Damascus moment where we said, we want to be change makers. We want to contribute to the good side of life. We don't just want to be burying people. I mean, in the long run, we're all dead, but that cannot be our preoccupation. And our preoccupation must be about making life good, making life worthwhile, right? So we then invested in insurance. We invested in medical administration to make sure that we can understand healthcare. And we wanted to get into hospitals, but we're not successful in that area. I think it's an overtraded area at the moment. And we're introduced into biotech by a gentleman called Martin Magwaza. But initially, there has been people that wanted us to get into biotech, but we weren't interested because they wanted us to get into generics, right? And I don't like generics. We don't like generics because there's no innovation. You bring nothing new. You're just copying what already exists. I mean, it's one of the hallmark of South African pharmaceutical companies. They don't innovate and bring in new things. We don't solve problems in a smart way. And I think in that journey with Magwaza, we rediscovered this country. We discovered this country that actually is one of the most innovative countries in the world. I mean, remember South Africa innovated and brought about the PBMR, Pebble Bed Modular Reactor, which was a small nuclear reactor that can be used for a town, right? And incidentally, the technology was taken up into the U.S. and it's been brought back to South Africa as I think they call it now, a small modular nuclear reactor, SMNR. Right? So we're going to be paying for the technology we actually created. Right? And the reason why these things happened is that our state was cowed out of investing in innovation. Remember, Sasol produces fuel out of coal. Right? Under the Fischer Trophy technology. I know that the Germans worked on it, but our state had the boldness to support Sasol in order to bring the technology to fruition. We produce Rayfalk. So there's a lot of innovations in the country that were driven by South Africans. But all innovations require the state, because the state is not politicians. The state is us, the people. Right? And if us, the people, were to pay individually 10 rand towards an innovation, that may not succeed. The risk is lower than if you were to pay, one company pays a billion rands in an innovation that may not succeed. So the state needs to lead innovations. If you look at the internet today, we have the internet that we've built all sorts of things. All social media platforms are built on the internet. All companies that are online sales are built on the internet. But the internet is the innovation of the U.S. military institution. Right? So without the U.S. as a state and its military investing in the internet, there will not be the internet. So we do need innovation in the state. But us as a group, we saw an opportunity to work with various South African scientific institutions that did not have the support of entrepreneurs in order to bring about to support them in the commercialization of their innovation. So we have a very rich pipeline of innovative blockbusters that we're going to be bringing to market, which are quintessential South African. And I think we stand proud, knowing that we know that this country that people talk so bad about, some even leave out of South Africa, some call the state incompetent, corrupt, and all of that. We do know that it's extremely innovative. And unfortunately, the state has been cowed out of investing in innovation, but we've taken the mantle and said, we're going to play a role in showcasing South Africa as an innovative country and build our business around South African innovations. And what this does to you is that you begin to get international recognition and work with other partners. I mean, we're working with a Microsphere in Switzerland on a nanotechnology innovation that the Swiss could not believe that South Africa has brought about this innovation. And we had to show them the patent that is owned by South Africans on the innovation that we're working with them. And we also get reciprocal. I mean, reciprocal technology that is given to us. The one company that we acquired in our quest for healthcare is a CDE, which is a specialist diabetes and hypertension company. Now, diabetes the funny thing is that diabetes is the biggest killer in this country, right? If you look at the mortality stats in South Africa, you'll see TB as number one, diabetes, and then there'd be a whole lot of other diseases that are related to diabetes. And if you combine them, that makes diabetes-related diseases the number one killer. Right? Now, this organization is a specialist diabetes and hypertension. It looks into, they've been working on a protocol, but now we have two technologies. One is the European, which is a fundoscopy camera. You know, when you go to your ophthalmologist or even what the eye doctor is called?
An optometrist.
Optometrist.
Yes.
So there's this camera where you put your chin and then they take image of your eye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Now, we have a handheld camera that can take an image of your eye and give you diagnosis on 27 ailments. Right? And how it works, that it takes the image and converts it into pixels and then into biomarkers. And then there's artificial intelligence that is able to detect any diseases from your eye. You know, when Abatoa Holobari Dabadima Show, the eye is the window to your soul. And technology has enabled us to be able to provide that camera in South Africa, where within the twinkle of an eye, you can get a diagnosis of about 27 diseases. That's one technology that we're launching in the country. And the second one that
Kandani, before you mention that second technology that you're working on, we do have a caller on the line, Jerry from Letlhabile, who wants to engage with you. So he has Jerry has a question. He's asking, can you cater to people who earn less than 8,000? Should we put Jerry on the line? Jerry, can you?
How are you?
Hi, Jerry. Yes, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Good show. You're doing very well. Anyway, I want to ask a question with regards to a category of a medical aid scheme, because in most cases, we have got some medical aid scheme in the industry that will put a category of 8 and 9,000 for people to be catered or to be covered by medical aid. Now, I just want to understand that in terms of CZWI, do you have any remedy, because of many of our people are below that wage of 8 to 9,000. Now, can you be able to create some sort of a mitigation to cover those people, because of many, we are moving out of that bracket. So, and people are living medical aid scheme. Like, for example, I won't mention the name. People are no longer being able to afford because of they removed a secondary doctor. They left people with one doctor. So is there any mitigation that you can assist those people who are falling out of the category of 8 to 9,000?
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. Yes. So, Kandani, can you answer that?
Yes. Look, I mean, there's no question that the medical aid is very expensive. I think that question can only have one answer, that it's very expensive and unaffordable. The difficulty that you have is that if you don't have medical aid, your alternative is a public health, which may not suit some of us who don't like to wait in queues, and some of us who want a certain standards of a cleanliness. Because too often you find that these huge public hospitals like Barra, if you are in a particular LSM, you tend not to want to put yourself to that level of service. But the difficulty is the people who are in the middle, those who can't afford medical aid but earn enough to be able to pay. There are not enough products for them to cover them. There has been a health insurance product that have been put in the market, but they are not legal. They are operating on an exemption. I think we sort of in a transition in as far as the healthcare affordability for people who are earning low income, and that transition, I don't know if NHI is a solution to that, or the state is going to have to look at the hybrid type of a solution whereby it's between medical aid and health insurance. Because I mean, our health system, I mean, a lot of things are broken with the health system, both public and private. I mean, our health system is very expensive, it's very curative, and that is why medical scheme costs continue to escalate every year. It is a problem. And every year there's an escalation. It kicks certain people out of affordability. Now, you get a situation where the regulations are so rigid that medical schemes are limited in what they can do. And there has been an engagement with the regulator to find ways in which they can regulate in a much more flexible way that will enable such people to be covered in some form. I mean, if you earn 8,000 rands, your medical aid contributions would be about 1,005, which is quite a lot of money or a huge percentage of your income. So at that level of income, medical aid is unaffordable.
All right.
We need a solution, and the regulator must come with a solution.
Mm. Now, Khandani, on that note, just before we run out of time, I do want to ask you one last question on that NHI note. And in the spirit of elections, we are in election season. If you were president, what would you change in the country? And if you can, be brief with your answer. We've got just about a minute.
Yes. Look, I think the one thing that I would really drive for if I was president is industrialization. I would ease off on the thing of climate change and renewable energies, because they are destroying our industries. Right? We are a country endowed with minerals. Right? We have to use hydrocarbons to get our people out of poverty so they can afford things for themselves. Yeah. The state has set itself where it must give things out, must give free education, it must give free health care. But that's not sustainable. You want a situation where people have a source of income where they can acquire these things for themselves. Right? Mm-hmm. And that way you solve a lot of problems as a state, as opposed to you being a giver of free houses, free health care, free education, and social grants to people that are able-bodied individuals that you should be making sure they have work. But because the state is married to ideologies that should be pursued by highly industrialized and highly developed countries and enable us to climb the ladder. The only ladder that all countries have climbed is the use of gas and coal to build their economies. Mm. Nobody has climbed the ladder of economic development using solar and wind. It ain't going to happen. You can't even run a kettle at home.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot run a smelter in a factory. You cannot run a mining organization with those types of energies. We need to ease off on these things and turn the blind eye and let China, the US, India, Germany, as the biggest polluters in the world, focus on reducing their pollution whilst we build our industry. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you so much, Khandani. That's all the time we have for this evening. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
All right. That's Khandani Msibi, Executive Chairman of 360 GSG, speaking to us on our Power Suit segment.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.